But some of you are not going to like what I'm going to ask you to do later. But I promise if you just trust me, it will be worth your while. I am going to ask you at some point to form up into groups. I know it's terrible. And you may think that's dumb. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to stay right here. Trust me, it'll be worthwhile. And you'll see why in a moment. If you want to turn in your Bibles to Luke chapter 16, we'll be there in just a little bit. If you want to turn to Luke chapter 16, we'll be there in just a little bit. But before we get there, Garrett and I were talking about what exactly we wanted to do with this particular lesson in his series on the Christian hope. And so we were looking at some of the parables of Jesus, particularly the eschatological parables. Now, when I say eschatological, what does that mean? What is it talking about? What is it referring to? Eschatological. Has anybody heard the word before? Maybe, maybe not. Okay, some of us have heard it before. Some of us are shaking our heads no. Eschatological. Okay. All right, good. That's fine. Eschatological means it relates to the end of times. Relates to the end of times. So the Greek word eschaton means last or end. And so eschatological parables are parables that refer to the end times, parables that refer either to heaven or hell or the afterlife. So, and in case you ever come across eschatological, in case you ever come across this word, eschatological, that is referring to the end times. So if you hear somebody talk about eschatology, that means that they're talking about the end times, you know, heaven, hell, the afterlife, etc. So, we wanted to start off with the eschatological parables because that gives us a clue into the kinds of things that the New Testament teaches about heaven, hell, the afterlife, etc., the Christian hope. So, starting out, and we just saw a little case in point here, every good teacher, you know, starts with where their audience is. Every good teacher knows where their audience is and starts with their students at the level that their students are at, and then pushes them further by doing a few things, either sharing new information or new ways of thinking, maybe by challenging old information and old ways of thinking, but also by guiding their students to engage with material for them to come to some insights on their own. And if you think about to maybe good teachers that you had in the past, teachers that you thought, oh, you know, I hadn't thought about it that way before, but yeah, it really does make sense when I kind of put all these pieces together. I mean, Jesus was doing that seemingly every day with the disciples. Jesus was doing that every day with the disciples. And so, I would say that has probably happened in this class already. I know it has with me. Remember when Garrett, a couple weeks ago, was going through what the Old Testament says about the afterlife? And he just kind of demonstrated it by, you know, several examples. And what he showed us was really just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, because he was giving us a verse and had, you know, five others that we could look at. What the Old Testament says about the afterlife is really not very much. You know, you either kind of die and maybe that's it, or there's this place called Sheol, which is just sort of where the dead happen to be. And occasionally, maybe just very rarely, there might be a hint at something maybe close to the resurrection. So Ezekiel chapter 37, this valley of the dry bones, where, you know, Ezekiel has a vision of a valley, and it's full of bones, full of human bones. And God says, Ezekiel, what do you see? Oh, I just see a valley of dry bones. Now, if they're dry, that means what? They've been there a long time. They're picked clean. And so God shows him a vision of these dry bones getting, you know, tendons and muscles and, you know, organs and flesh and everything, and it becomes a valley of living people again. And he said, basically, this is what I'm going to do to Israel. They were dead in exile, and I'm going to bring them back. I'm going to make them alive again. But that still is just not that isn't quite exactly what Jesus talks about when he talks about resurrection, or what the New Testament talks about. It's just kind of a hint that there might be something similar going on. And then, so last week, remember Garrett was talking about this figure in Greek philosophy, Plato. Talked about how the soul versus the body, and how according to a lot of Greeks, the body is just kind of a shell, and the real important thing is the soul underneath. And Garrett was saying, Paul doesn't make that argument. When Paul starts talking about the resurrection in Athens, what did the people there in Athens do to Paul? What did they say about Paul? You remember? Was that Ernie? Yeah, they said he was crazy. Resurrection of the body, nobody wants a body forever. You want the soul to live forever. But that's not, again, Garrett demonstrated last week that that's not exactly what the Christian hope is. And we'll, no pun intended, but we'll kind of flesh that out a little bit more as we go on, especially as we get to 1 Corinthians chapter 15. But this whole idea of body and soul, or the realm of the dead and Sheol, the New Testament actually does give us a lot more about the afterlife, but only in bits and pieces. Only in bits and pieces, only here and there. So at no point, not even in the book of Revelation, does Jesus or Paul or Peter or James or Jude or John in Revelation, none of them at any point say, okay, listen up, because I'm about to give you everything you need to know about heaven, hell, the afterlife, judgment, etc. Here we go. At no point does any author of the New Testament actually sit down and do that. And part of the reason why is because they're addressing specific needs. And so Paul is filling in gaps. Paul is filling in gaps with maybe what some of the Corinthians had trouble with. Paul is filling in gaps with what some of the people in some of his other congregations were having trouble with. Is everybody following me so far? You following me so far? Okay. Good. So, what we get most often from the parables is not just kind of this grand systematic picture of everything you need to know, and here's all the final questions you'll have. What we get is something, little bits and pieces here and there. Not even Jesus. I mean, Jesus says it in Mark 13 and Matthew 24, that not even Jesus knows the day or the hour, but only the Father. And so Jesus is not intending to give us absolutely everything that we need. What we get from the parables especially is kind of a good, solid, general picture of what is going on in the afterlife. So when it comes to the Christian hope, afterlife, heaven and hell, what we get from Jesus is a pretty good general picture of what's going to happen. Now, Jesus teaches a lot about heaven and hell, mostly in parables. So let me ask this. What is a parable? What's a parable? How would you describe a parable to somebody?
A story with a moral.
Story with a moral, yeah, sure. Story with a moral. A story that is intended to teach somebody. Are they stories that are about real people, or are they fictional stories that intend to tell us a point? Could be fictional, yeah. Okay. Could be fictional, yeah. So Jesus is using kind of these these stories that are, they're kind of like metaphors, Or a lot of times they'll say something like, the kingdom of heaven is like. Well, if you remember all the way back to high school English, and some of you are having flashbacks of horror, that's fine. But the kingdom of heaven is like. Well, that's a simile. Remember comparison using like or as. To what shall I compare the kingdom of heaven? Well, the kingdom of heaven is like a sower who went out to sow seeds. Okay, well, that's a parable. He's not talking about a particular sower that he had in mind that he saw earlier that morning. And everybody knows that he's talking about, Yoshiyahu, the sower who lives down the street next to the synagogue. Robert, yes, sir.
Yes, that's what
Yeah.
That's a good example for me.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Most of us will remember a really powerful story that a preacher has told, right? Most of us remember, really powerful stories. We may not always be able to remember the exegetical point that went into that story, but we remember the story. I was at graduation yesterday for Asbury, and this guy told this great story. First time I ever heard it. I don't think I'll ever forget that story again, because I could see it as he was telling it. And I'll probably end up using that story sometime, because it's a really fascinating story. So we can all agree that Jesus was a master teacher. And part of the reason is what Robert said. He used parables. He kind of told these stories that hook you in. And you get interested in the parable because you want to find out what's going to happen next. What is, there's some drama. There's some uncertainty about what's going to happen. And then sometimes, something will happen and you think, oh my goodness, I didn't even see that coming. I didn't even see that coming. So by teaching in parables, and we're about to get to the actual parables, but by teaching in parables, Jesus gradually emphasized certain points over and over again to his disciples. And his disciples remembered those and told those to each other, told those to new Christians, and then eventually we have them in the Gospels. We have them in the Gospels. And so what's important to keep in mind, though, is that no single parable tells us absolutely everything that we need to know. The temptation sometimes is to read a parable and try to pick apart every little detail and say, all right, this must mean this and this must mean that, but how does that square with this? And so we end up having this hideous mongrel of a picture of what Jesus thinks about the afterlife, and we're probably making too much of some of those details. So turn with me to Luke chapter 16. Let's take a look at verse 19. Take a look at verse 19. I will read, I think it's 19 through 31. Yeah, 19 through 31. This is a little bit longer of a parable, but I'll read this for us. And what I'm going to do is, after we read through this, what we're going to do is I'm going to write some things on the board, some things that are maybe distinct features of that parable, or maybe some dominant ideas, maybe some images that come to mind, because that's what really hooks us with parables. There's images. We can almost see it playing out in our mind. I mean, this is the parable of the rich man and Lazarus. How many of us read this and don't picture this, this rich man in the fire and Lazarus up with Abraham in this great chasm, and we all picture that when we read it. So read with me. I'll read and you can read along quietly. I'll start in verse 19. There was a rich man who was dressed in purple and fine linen and who feasted sumptuously every day. And at his gate lay a poor man named Lazarus, covered with sores, who longed to satisfy his hunger with what fell from the rich man's table. Even the dogs would come and lick his sores. The poor man died and was carried away by the angels to be with Abraham. The rich man also died and was buried. In Hades, where he was being tormented, he looked up and saw Abraham far away with Lazarus by his side. He called out, "Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus to dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue. I am in agony in these flames." But Abraham said, "Child, remember that during your lifetime you received your good things, and Lazarus in like manner evil things. But now he is comforted here, and you are in agony. Besides all this, between you and us, a great chasm has been fixed, so that those who might want to pass from here to you cannot do so, and no one can cross from there to us. He said, Then, Father, I beg you to send him to my father's house, for I have five brothers, that he may warn them, so that they will not also come to this place of torment. Abraham replied, They have Moses and the prophets. They should listen to them. And he said, No, Father Abraham, but if someone goes to them from the dead, they will repent. He said to him, If they do not listen to Moses and the prophets, neither will they be convinced, even if someone rises from the dead. Whew. That's tough. That's a tough parable to listen to. You almost feel bad for the guy who's there in Hades. At least he's not a total heathen. He at least recognizes that there might be some hope for somebody else. You know, if he were it seems like if he were just completely rotten to the core, he might say, well, my brothers are going to get it too. They deserve it. But that's not it. He's worried about them. So taking a look at some of these features or images, I think one of the first things that we notice is we've got a rich man. Is he righteous or wicked? Wicked. Thank you, Linnea. What about the poor man? Righteous or wicked? Righteous. Okay. Some other things. Who else appears in this parable? Any other particular figure? Abraham. Okay. So with Abraham, describe kind of where Abraham is. Paradise. Yeah, it's rest. Abraham. I think some maybe older translations say something like Abraham's bosom. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Abraham. So rest. Where is the rich man?
Certain rich man who was clothed in purple and fine linen and cared sumptuously every day. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say that he's bad. It's just that he's living a high life, you know.
That is true. It doesn't actually say this man was wicked in that verse. But, I mean, isn't the implication that he was wicked because of how Lazarus was there the whole time? Having nobody to comfort him but dogs. He was right outside his house.
And he had no compassion for anybody else.
That's the implication, yeah. So, although in that verse it doesn't say this guy was evil, like the next verse basically says it. Does that make sense, Joe?
Yeah.
Okay. So, where did the rich man end up?
Hell
or torments, yeah. Mine... I was reading from the NRSV. It says Hades. What does it describe about Hades? What does it say? What images come to mind when you read that?
Fire
and flames. Yeah. Okay. That's not good. So fire. Is there anything else? Anything else? What does Abraham say anything to him?
He can see heaven from where he is.
That's true. Yeah. Okay. That's true. So we can. So he can see heaven. Does Abraham say anything to him? Does Abraham encourage him, or does he warn him? Was that?
He says, remember in your lifetime you received your good things, and likewise Lazarus' evil things. Mm-hmm. But now he is comforted, and you are tormented.
Yeah. It sounds like judgment, really. Sounds like some judgment there. And then Abraham also says, basically, if these guys are ignoring Moses and the prophets, they can't be helped. Because they have Moses and the prophets, they can't be helped. I mean, ultimately, that's a warning. For people hearing the parable, I'd say that's a pretty strong warning. Moses and the prophets point to what it is that Jesus is trying to tell. So we have judgment, and we have warning also. Okay. I think these are some pretty distinct features, some dominant ideas: judgment, warning. This idea of Hades or fire that's related to judgment. So here's what I want you to do. And again, like I said earlier, sorry if you're not going to like this, but trust me, trust me, trust me. This will actually be fun. You may think that I have a skewed view of fun. Yes, that is true. I am getting my PhD. that's a skewed view of fun. So we've got a couple of other parables that I want us to look at. And specifically, let's see if we can get this. Specifically, I've got four other parables. And so, let me write these down for us. And basically what I'm envisioning is maybe this group over here be a group. Maybe we, actually, we'll need to split up this section into two groups. Y'all can do that however you want to, but just play along. This section we'll need to split up into two. What I'll want to do is kind of earn from Ernie over, be a group, and then y'all be a group. Now you may actually have to get out of your seat and move. I know that's an anathema. I know that's anathema. But so here's what I'm constantly losing my cap. This group that ends up being maybe over here. I want y'all to look at Matthew chapter 25, verses 1 through 13. That's the parable of the 10 bridesmaids, or 10 virgins. And please don't be afraid to get up and move, because I want you to be able to talk with each other and do that. The next group, this group back there, Jason, I'm looking at you. The parable of the great banquet. So maybe it's a little early to be talking about big lunch. But Matthew chapter 22... verses 1 through 14. Great banquet. This group here. Would y'all mind doing the parable of the rich fool? So Luke 12. I saw Adam move. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Look at that. Luke 12, verses 13 through 21. The parable of the rich fool. This group here, y'all will need to talk about it. And then this group over here, the parable of the tenants. Mark chapter 12, verses 1 through 12. So what I want you to do in these groups is do what I just did with the parable of the rich man and Lazarus. Notice what kind of characters we have. If it specifically names somebody, great. Notice what kind of images do you see. Is there rest? Is there fire? What kind of places does he talk about? Abraham's bosom, or paradise, heaven, hell, Hades, something like that, Valley of Torment. So notice characters. This one should be pretty easy to find some characters. It's about, it's in the title of the parable. What does it say about these? Are they prepared? Is somebody wicked? Does somebody lie? I want you to look at that, and we're gonna take 5 to 7 minutes, and then we're gonna talk about what sorts of things you saw in your parables. And then from there, I think we'll be able to get kind of a pretty nice picture of some of the things that Jesus taught about the afterlife. So break up into your groups. I'll walk around and make sure that everybody is on task and not on Facebook, and then we can keep going. I wanted this side to be two separate groups, please. So you'll want to read. What do y'all have? What's going on over here? Make sure you're not just reading it, but also discussing what sorts of things you see. So maybe just another minute or two, just another minute or two. Okay, stop, put your pencils down. I think they just finished. Man. Would y'all like to join us? All right. It was really funny. For like the first couple of minutes, I saw the Frozen Chosen sitting in the pews. I was like, I don't know about all this. And then somewhere around minute 4 or 5, yeah, I'm hearing people laughing and cutting up, you know, talking about windblown hair over here, putting stuff in garages, yeah, comments about Bible translations. So, okay, all right. So I hope that you found this profitable, and I really think we will as we go along and start seeing some of what everybody did. So we're going to mix this up. I'm not going to do this in this order. Mark 12 group over here, the parable of the tenants. What kinds of images and things, characters and stuff did y'all see? Motifs and imagery, to use language from high school English. The wicked vine dressers or fine dressers? Fine? Okay, so there are wicked people. Okay, great.
And then there was the vineyard owner.
Okay, the owner, yeah. All right.
And there were servants and
the son. Interesting, okay. There were multiple servants, right? Sent, okay. And then the owner, so I'll put owner and son. Okay, great. Other things? Mm-hmm. Context. All right. Okay, so maybe some warning in there? Interesting. Okay, great. Very good. Anything else? Yeah. So there's this interesting stone image that comes up. Old Testament. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so there's interpretation to this as well. Very good. All right. What happened? Does anything happen to the tenants? Does anything happen to the people working the vineyard? Right. So there's a warning and maybe some judgment also. Judgment, whether you see it or it's implied. Great. Okay. This group. What sorts of images and things did you see in the parable of the 10 bridesmaids? What kind of characters?
We had the foolish and the wise.
Okay, so foolish and wise characters. Great. All right, so preparation is an issue here. Okay.
And then, of course, there's the bridegroom.
The groom. Interesting. I wonder who that could be. Right, yeah. Okay.
And then there was a feast instead of rest. It was a wedding feast.
Yeah, great. Okay, wedding feast. I had a really good wedding. I went to a really good wedding dinner on June 2nd, 2012. That's our anniversary. Wedding feast. That's when Linnea and I got married, just in case you didn't catch the joke. Sorry. All right, so there was a wedding feast, okay? What happens afterwards?
The ones that weren't prepared or the foolish ones got the door shut in their face. They
okay.
Did not allow them.
What time of day did that happen? Midnight. So they were left out in the darkness. Interesting. They were left out in the darkness. And they were hungry also. They were probably hangry. Hungry and angry. Okay. Anything else? Okay, great. Let's move over to this group. What kinds of images, characters, things did you see? And if something's already up here, feel free to mention it. Feel free to mention it. Because, you know, I hope you're beginning to see kind of what's happening here. You have a spokesman? I can select one. Joe spoke up. You're the spokesperson.
It starts off by saying that there's a crowd to tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me.
Okay, so maybe some selfishness?
Yeah.
Maybe some selfishness there?
Or
right, something like that. Okay.
So Jesus replied that, who made me judge or arbitrator over this?
Okay, all right.
So he doesn't want to play judge, but he tells them a story about a foolish rich man.
Interesting. Okay, so we have a foolish person.
Yeah, a foolish person.
And a rich man, too.
Ambitious to get more and more and build bigger barns.
Mm-hmm.
To sort of hoard.
So he was going to hoard that.
Instead of sharing.
Instead of sharing that, okay. So maybe some selfishness there.
Yeah.
What happens to him?
Well, he dies.
He dies, all right.
He didn't figure on that part.
Yeah, we never do.
Yeah.
What does God say to him? Mm-hmm. Maybe some judgment and warning in there too. Interesting. Yeah. Where's it going to go? Yeah. The Egyptian pharaohs built these massive pyramids and these fabulous tombs to keep their wealth, and spent all kinds of energy cursing, you know, anybody who would dare enter. And almost all that treasure was gone from grave robbers. This last group, Jason, I saw you writing some things.
Well, there was a king.
A king, okay, good, yeah. So another another important figure like that, great.
He had slaves.
Okay, interesting, servants, all right.
He sent out to invite good and evil.
Mm-hmm.
Also,
okay, so invitation is one that we don't have up here yet. All right. Yeah, so yeah, a feast at least. A fattened livestock. That's right, yep. All right, a feast.
There was also talk of armies going out
mm-hmm.
to get the murderers.
To bring people in, yeah, that's right. So, yeah. All right. I know our time is running away from us. Jason, did y'all have anything else? Okay. So I know our time is running away from us. Give me 2 minutes, and I'll bring some order to this chaos on the board. I hope that what you can see up here is a number of different images and types of characters that Jesus would use when he was speaking in these kinds of parables about heaven, hell, and the afterlife. One of the things that Jesus liked to do was to use these parables that were relatable to people. You know, a wealthy landowner who leased out his land to servants happened all the time in the ancient world. You know, wicked servants who disobeyed their master. A wedding feast that was supposed to be a glorious occasion. You had people who were foolish and wise in how they went about their daily lives. There was a groom at this wedding feast. There was warning and judgment. And Jesus is putting all of these different images together. He's showing all of these things to say, look, you need to be wise about how you carry yourself day to day. That when the invitation, it comes to come to the feast of the groom, be wise. Don't be foolish. Be wise. Don't be foolish. Because the foolish ones do ultimately suffer sometimes a pretty horrible fate. I've got it on the other side of the board. But, you know, this fate of the rich man versus Lazarus. You know, in one of the parables of the weeds that I didn't have you read. What happens to the weeds? It grows up with the wheat. And then when it's time to harvest everything, the weeds get harvested, bundled up, and what happens to them? They're burned. They're thrown into the fire. That's judgment. So if you were to walk with Jesus for for as long as the disciples did, probably about 3 years or so, you would have heard stories like this time and again, and you would have gradually gotten to see a picture of what the afterlife is like. It's rest. It's a glorious feast for the righteous. It's judgment. It's torment for the wicked. So be prepared. Listen to Moses and the prophets now. Be prepared. And I think we're able to get a better sense of all that because we've kind of shared these different parables with each other. Well, everybody has heard how great class is. They're bound and determined to get in, so I think we'll wrap up here. Thank you very much.